Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Good morning, and we do thank you for listening. You're listening to America's Web Radio, and it's time now for Medicine on Call with Dr. Elena George. And Dr. George is experiencing some of Atlanta traffic right at the moment, but she's on her way and should be in here momentarily. We've got her guest today is Mr. Joe Myers, and Joe's been on before. He is an economist and knows what he's talking about. So welcome, Joe, to America's Web Radio and Medicine on Call.
Good morning. Thank you and Medicine on Call for having me as a guest this morning. Always a pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. You know, here we are, 2017, and it's like every year. It's already going by rapidly. We're here towards the end of January, and we have a new president, a new administration. We got a partial new cabinet, and the economy, the stock market has sort of gone wild. But just, you know, Trump's been in the White House now for less than 2 weeks, really. What is your overall view of this new administration?
Well, first of all, I'm very pleased with what President Trump has been able to accomplish in just a few short weeks. I think if it's any indication of what he can accomplish in the first year of his presidency, I'm going to be very, very pleased. I don't think there's any disagreement. We've got great problems and great challenges ahead of us, and it appears to me at this point that the appointments that the president has made have all been top people, very, very capable, and very, very distinguished, and I think they'll tackle the problems ahead, and they'll do a very fine job. That's the way I'm seeing it.
Well, you know, you said something very interesting. What he's done in just such a short period of time, during the campaign, he certainly recognized and pointed out places that we have problems. And you just sit there, or I do anyway, and wonder, you know, we let an administration and a Congress just run over us, and we did nothing about it. And what, you know, it makes me boil thinking of the potential of the United States, and Trump is already pulling out some of that potential.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think the answer to the question you've just posed is it's a lot easier to ignore a problem than it is to go ahead and attempt to solve it. Some people are very comfortable with problems existing and continuing to worsen than certainly addressing a problem and attempting to solve it. Yeah. I think the answer is people resist change, and I think what we have to do is not resist change. We have to go with it, and I think there's changes ahead that we're going to have to accept whether we agree with them or not. That's just the way we're going to move forward. It's progress.
I sometimes, particularly at Congress, and I basically disregard the previous administration as weak in every area, do nothing, they did nothing, they didn't know what to do. So we're not talking about the administration, but I look at Congress sometimes and with things that they should be handling and they could handle and they could fix, I just wonder if they want problem, so they think it's some kind of job security.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think we're all trying to figure out the answer as to why Congress and, more importantly, the Senate didn't move on these problems a lot sooner. I think it had to take a businessman, you know, such as Mr. Trump, to really bring in a different kind of approach and a different type of solving process to really address these problems and determine how best to solve them. These problems have been building, as I've said many times, for many, many decades. The solutions are going to be very complex and very painful, but nevertheless, we have to go ahead and attempt to solve these problems now before they worsen any further.
Couldn't agree with you more, and I know there was a lot of misgivings and questions and wringing of hands and wringing of towels, and now Mr. Schumer adds tears to it. But the fact of the matter is, as I see it to date, we have a leader.
Well, we have a very strong, dynamic leader. He's bringing fresh leadership, certainly, to the country, and I think we have to get behind this man and support him in every way that we can and let him do what he thinks is in the best interest of the American people, and I'm confident he will do exactly that.
Why do you think there is so much pushback on it? Is it just like, now, I know when you get to be my age, we don't like change, but obviously I realize from a country standpoint, we had to have it. We need it, and we, from a military standpoint, up and down the scale, but these young, I can't address them nicely. These young idiots that are protesting that have no clue what they're talking about, and then there are a lot of older idiots that have shown a push. What is the pushback about? I want the United States to be the best country in the world, and you know, be the leader that we should be and that we have been. Why is the pushback on Trump?
Well, I agree with you. We want this country to be great once again, and I think we're on the road to certainly accomplishing that. I think people resist change because they don't understand the scope of the change, and they don't understand how the problem can certainly be solved to their benefit. People, I think, fear things they don't understand, and they don't have a basis in which to certainly determine what they think needs to be done as we move forward. These problems, as I've said earlier, are very great, they're very complex, they've been building for decades, and the solution to problems like this are normally never very easy. But nevertheless, I think when people finally see the benefit of the changes that President Trump is making, I think they're going to get on board at some point and support him as well. Hopefully they do that.
Yeah, Dr. George just got here, and you know, I want to say one last thing, and this is that my wife is, I don't want to say apolitical, but she doesn't get involved with it to the extent that I do. But the other night she was sitting in her chair, and she where she works, she's a secretary for a principal at a middle school, and you know, all of the liberal teachers and all this were complaining about how terrible this immigration thing is and the ban on all Muslims and this and that. So she was sitting over there, and she pulled up on CNN the what Trump had signed, and she said, you know, this is a very good document. All people have to do is read it. It's no ban on Muslims. It's a restriction on countries and bringing people in until we know who we're bringing in. And this is the way government should be. He's protecting us. Why are people, you know, and this is the whole scenario, is people seem to go by the Pelosi theory of act against it and then read it someday and maybe you'll understand it.
Well, I think we got to get back to read it first.
Absolutely. And here's Dr. George.
I can't agree with you guys more about read it first and, you know, do your own due diligence. I'm watching Daily Joe, the various news outlets talk about the stock market going up to 20,000 and it's up, it's down one day, and it's about confidence. It's all sorts of things. But I wanted to really drill down on, I just got in, so I heard you guys talking about the new administration. But what is it that you think the major things that can be done to turn the economy around? I mean, we've been getting all sorts of strange statistics about how great the economy is, how we've come out of the recession. But I haven't seen that. I mean, a third of the country is still not working, or they're working more than one job. The healthcare system, as you know and I both know, has been overtaken by corporate interests. It's more expensive. There's less choice. It's just a disaster. And we're dealing with people who just want to talk about emotions and social justice without regards to the facts or reality. So without being, you know, you're not a political person at all, and the show tries to stay right down the line of truth versus rhetoric. What would you do if you were running the show to get this back on track?
Well, I don't think there's any question we're facing great problems, but we're also facing great challenges in solving those problems as well.
Mm-hmm.
As I said earlier, these problems have been building for many, many decades. They're not going to be solved as quickly as most people would like to believe possibly they can be. I think we have to get back to the basics, as we've talked about in previous shows, a man's honesty, his integrity, and the truth. And I think we have to take a hard look at the problems we have, and we have to put together a workable plan in which to solve them. I think that's the first step we have to do.
Well, is that step raising tariffs? Is that step, bringing back productivity or production in the country? I mean, the manufacturing industry's been completely gutted. I remember when I was a kid, you'd hear the union label jingle when people were advertising buying American on TV. That's gone by the wayside. Is what President Trump's doing to bring back business, will that slow? We know it's not going to be a great time in terms of this recovery, but is that one way to grow our way out of this hole that we're in?
Well, we were at one time, as I'm sure you know, the greatest manufacturing country in the world, mm-hmm. and we certainly had risen to that point after World War II and during the 1950s and 60s. And then in the 1970s and 80s, we started outsourcing our manufacturing base to the lowest wage countries all around the world in a way that we were allowing corporate profits to continue to grow.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we're going to bring back prosperity to America, we have to bring back manufacturing. We have to bring back to the shores of America the decent paying jobs.
I think with the
tax cuts that the president has proposed, we're starting to see that already happen. I think we're going to continue to see less regulation, which is very, very important for small businesses and certainly corporations as well. And lastly, and very importantly, we're going to see a spending boom, money being spent on rebuilding the infrastructure of America, which is long overdue.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the key building blocks, I think, that are going to be put in place to turn this economy around. Unfortunately, I don't think we'll see the results of these programs for quite a while. These problems have been great. They've been building for decades, and the solutions that we put in place are not going to solve them as immediately as most people would want to believe they can be solved.
Joe, don't you think it's just terrible what President Trump said about the pipeline, and heaven forbid the pipe be manufactured in the United States? Isn't that just terrible?
Well, you know, when you talk about the pipeline, this is something that should have went ahead a couple of years ago, in my humble opinion. For a lot of reasons, it did not. But I think we have to get back to America first, and if it's America first, we've got to certainly use the raw materials that we're going to be putting to use to accomplish the things that are ahead of us infrastructure-wise. And we have to use these raw materials that are manufactured from U.S. companies. That's the way I believe it should be.
You know, I was listening to the news yesterday, and a gentleman came on and talked about the fact that there are about 75 privately funded construction projects that have been on the launching pad, but they've not received permits by the government. They talk about...
Yes.
I mean, that's criminal. I mean, there's a high-speed train project from Houston to Dallas, privately funded. And then there's something with, I think there's wind energy or something going from Louisiana to Georgia. Just imagine if those private concerns were allowed to get off the ground. No taxpayer money are involved with them, but these guys saying that those two projects alone were about 600,000 jobs, good-paying jobs that are there. What do you think, in your humble opinion, that kept this from happening? Is it the green energy people? Is it the
Well, I think it was excessive regulation, and I think people were regulated to the point, quite honestly, that they could no longer do business, and certainly do business the way they had done it in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've regulated business to the point where it's literally impossible to start a new business. It's just too much regulation and cost.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to eliminate regulation, and we have to give incentive for companies to once again compete and come back into the marketplace and be part of these infrastructure projects that are going to move forward. That's what I believe needs to be done.
Well, on that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, Joe, I wanted to ask a question about the tech industry, because that's been, I've noticed yesterday, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, all these transnational companies have been up in arms about the executive order about immigration. And I did a little bit of digging on what's going on. I mean, a third of the tech industry is, the jobs are given to foreign nationals. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. But is it true that they're saying it's because there's not enough American brain power to take those jobs? I find that hard to believe, frankly. And to me, the way this whole global system works, they want the cheapest labor, the most compliant workforce, the docile people just happy to get a crumb, and that's what they're filling up their employment roles with. Which one is true?
I think it's about cost, quite frankly. They're looking to seek out and continue to find the cheapest worldwide labor, Elena.
I think so, too. I see it in the healthcare industry as well, where there's been an outsourcing of the medical personnel, the doctors, to foreign graduates. And if you walk into any hospital, especially rural, that's all you deal with or see. And these H-2 visas, or it's H-1B visas, whatever they're called, where people come over as, professionals, who started that? Is that something that the corporate interests lobbied for? Did the government make it up? Who started this
That's exactly what it is.
Okay. Which, the corporate, or who did it? Or who started it?
It's the corporate side that started it. You know, they wanted to continue to be profitable. There
right.
was worldwide competition.
Right.
The only way they can continue to make the profits they had been able to make prior was to seek out cheaper labor. And they lobbied, certainly, Congress and the Senate to allow them to do that. And
mm-hmm.
we're now seeing the fallout simply where these jobs that are being created are not going to Americans. And we're told that they don't have the education level or the skill to do these jobs in the first place. And I wholeheartedly agree with you. I don't believe that for a minute. I really don't.
Okay, so I'm not losing my mind on that one, because it didn't make a heck of a lot of sense. You've got MIT, you've got all these, you know, awesome colleges, universities, and you can't find the talent to fill the jobs. I mean, I just find that to be ridiculous. And I have a question as a segue about the corporate structure, these transnational corporations. I read again that they have an interesting setup. They have a headquarters in the United States. They may have other locations throughout the world. But when they hire the people who work overseas, most of them are hired as contract labor. And I know from a personal standpoint and from a tax standpoint, you're not paying the payroll, you're not paying the taxes for that person, or the payroll tax necessarily, because it falls on the individual. So what happens when you hire a contract? Why is it in the interest of a corporation to hire a contract labor overseas? How do they benefit from that?
Well, it's a way to save money, pure and simple.
Okay, so those guys are not paying U.S. taxes, right? Because they're not employees in the classic sense of the transnational company. Is that how they save the money?
Well, they save the money, I think, with tax benefits, and they save the money when we talk about wages.
Mm, okay. So if the government's immigration rule or executive order goes into effect, how will it really affect these people that they're saying, or they're just preemptively striking because they know that down the road, if you tighten up on legislation, you're going to tighten up on what they do on a business level as well. Is that, what do you think the reason they're fighting
this? Well, I think the answer is twofold. We're going to tighten up on legislation, and we're going to tighten up on the way they do business. Absolutely.
Okay. And so what is...
I can just about hear you, Elena.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you better now.
What's corporate inversion?
Well, I think when we talk about corporate inversion, we talk about money not being put into plants and equipment, and certainly not being put into training individuals in the manufacturing and the research of new products. I think we're talking about the bottom line, we're talking profits, and we're talking about any way in which we can use the asset base of the company not only to grow the business but increase the profits as well, at the expense of the product and at the expense of the people who manufacture and certainly do the research to build them.
So basically it's all about the corporate bottom line, as much money
yes,
as they can
is.
Glean, and at the expense of everything else, whether it's training new employees, whether it's putting money into new infrastructure to, you know, build your footprint in whatever country you're in, especially ours. So basically just get the suck. The money goes one way. It doesn't come back, basically.
Well, I think when you talk about the hardworking Americans we have in this country that are certainly employable and very capable and certainly very skilled, there isn't a question in my mind that we have a very, very diverse pool of labor that we can put to work.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to increase the incentives for these companies to once again manufacture here in America, build modern plants and equip them and train and put good people to work, because I think that's going to be the economic future of America as we move forward, Elena.
I absolutely agree. And, I mean, I think there's probably two schools of thought on this, it seems like. There's the progressive mentality of raise the wages for everybody, distribution of the redistribution of the profits to the workers. But that has an end point that seems to me once you've done it, you can't dip from that well again, can you?
Well, I think what we're witnessing is an ending rather than a fresh beginning, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think this process has run its course.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't any question that Americans are the hardest working people in the world. You know, we're very talented, and we certainly have the knowledge and the ability, I think, to solve many, many problems in many, many fields. I think we have to be given once again a chance on balance to show what Americans are truly capable of doing, and we haven't been able to show that in a number of decades.
It's almost like someone had their finger on the scale, you know, and we were just held down and told, just take a benefit instead of being able to work. And it seems like also that there was a media campaign to make people think that there wasn't enough people who wanted to work, or everybody had a job, so we had to bring in other folks to fill the empty slots. It's from what you're telling me and from what I've experienced and read, that's totally not true.
No.
Joe, if you don't mind me asking
not
a question. We had a gentleman on another show this past Saturday that is a master welder and instructor. And, you know, we're talking about our country got away from tech schools. Oh, my God, you went to a tech school. How terrible. Personally, I think we should bring back technical schools in every area. Get the kids that, you know, there's some kids that college just isn't their place. They know how to do it with their hands. They want to do it with their hands. So bring back tech schools for them. Whether it's a car repair or welding or building construction of any kind. And I think, it's my opinion, that this is one of the keys to our making America great again. There's nothing wrong. You know, you can walk out of a welding school today and get six figures almost automatically.
Or electrician, or plumbing.
Like, sure, anything.
Yeah.
But bring back our tech and let kids, you know, you don't need a college degree. Maybe it's an associate degree or whatever you want to call it from a tech school, but bring back people that know how to work with their hands.
I couldn't agree with you more. Blue collar, going back in the good days we once all experienced, was the backbone of the American economy. We have to get back to that. You're right. There's not everyone who's certainly qualified or capable or even has the interest to go through college and further their education, but that in itself does not mean that these individuals cannot be skilled and make a meaningful contribution to make America a better place and give themselves and their family a better life. You're absolutely right.
But it seems that, again, we've had this rhetoric, this propaganda, that if you don't go to college, you can't get ahead in life. Not everybody, I mean, it was like college for all, paid for, you know, free college for all. I mean, it just makes no sense. That one size fits all is a bad idea. I don't care what anybody says.
You're absolutely right.
It doesn't serve anybody, but it does create debt slaves, though, doesn't it? I've read that the debt associated with student loans is trillions of dollars at this point, isn't it?
The student loan fiasco is worsening as we speak. It's over $1 trillion, and it's probably going to continue to worsen. The good-paying jobs, as I've said earlier, are going to take time to work their way back to the shores of America, and hopefully we're on a pathway now to see that accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
But there isn't any question that the recent college graduates are now facing a tremendous debt burden as they begin their career and their working life, certainly in this economy. Even under the best of circumstances, Elena, it's going to take many, many, many years in which to pay back these mm-hmm. loans if they're able to be paid back at all. Just the cost of living for a freshly graduated college student, when you look at the amount that they would pay on a car loan or for rent or just for basic living expenses, leaves very little leeway for them to make any kind of substantive payment on their student loan. So this is a situation that I think has been allowed to worsen. It's gotten to the point now where it's a tragedy for most of these freshly graduated college students. And they're going to have to really buckle up and really put a plan in place to be able to pay down these loans over many, many years. It's unfortunate, but that's the way it is.
On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I hope today that we are, you know, getting more information on the various talking points that we've all lived with for the past 12 years or longer. I want to discuss another, whether it's true or not, statement that always gets made. So people who are proponents of open borders and unlimited immigration have been saying for years that, one, these folks are taking jobs Americans don't want, and two, they are contributing to our economy, and that we need them because they're an engine driver for our economy. Now, my question to you know, from a bigger picture, maybe, but I wanted to drill down to Mexico in particular, because I read that the remittances, which is the money sent back to Mexico, is so much that it's like the number two I think it's just after oil in terms of what brings in money to their country. That's a hell
it's
of a lot of
business,
money.
It's a big business, Elena.
It is. So how can someone, how can somebody or a group contribute to our economy when they're sending that money back to their home country and it's the number two moneymaker for that country? How does that work?
Well,
is it possible?
These people are employed here in the U.S. and they send money back to their family in Mexico, and it's a transaction which has a cost attached to it, just like everything else. But, you know, to touch upon what you said earlier, and I think you'll agree with this statement, a country without borders is not a country.
Agreed.
And we have to have borders, and we have to enforce them, whether people want to believe that or not. It's something that has to be done.
I absolutely agree. So from the statement that we need unlimited immigration to help our economy, and it's a valuable contribution, is that statement on its face actually true? I don't think it can be. But
I don't believe it is. I think we've got many, many skilled, many, many capable people that would be willing to take decent paying jobs and make a meaningful contribution to make this country great again. We just have to give them the opportunity to go back to work. That's the way I see it.
I see it the same way. And there's a group of folks that no one ever talks about, but I think they're also contributing to an underground economy, and that's the people who are imprisoned. I mean, there's a whole system where they're making goods, producing services, and that's a wage. These are low-wage people who are forced to do it, basically. And I'm not sure. I mean, this corporate jail system has become an economy in, unto itself, and a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you don't have people
well,
to go in there.
Well, it's competing against private industry very
exactly.
unfairly, and I think these people would be better off getting the skills in which when they finally return to society, they can make a meaningful contribution to certainly turning their lives around. I don't see where they're going to learn a skill making these products for somebody else.
I absolutely agree. Plus, you think about how a business works, you need workers. So you're always going to have this push towards resting people and filling up these jails because it's a money-making venture. Do you think there's any way or possibility that we can pull ourselves back from this privatization of the penal system? Is that possible?
Well, you know, when you talk about the penal system, we have over 3 million people incarcerated in prisons throughout the United States, and we've got the largest prison population of any country in the world. Do you know that?
I know, even China, which is like...
Absolutely.
It's a country unto itself. It's bigger than New Zealand. It's crazy, isn't it?
Incarcerating criminals has become a big business.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the... No one ever talks about that as a social ill, and that affects everybody across the board.
It's a very profound social level. I couldn't agree with you more.
Not, you know, whether the window dressing to make people go out and picket and be violent on the street. There's really, you know, I'm finding now that I'm
going. Well, we have so many millions of people incarcerated for nonviolent crimes.
I agree, but, you know, that's the three strikes you're out and the Clinton era where you had 1 ounce and you were in there for life. I mean, these are all things that it actually became an entity based on legislation.
Yes, it did.
So how do we, I mean, if you could wave your wand and figure out a way to pull back all the rhetoric, what is the thing that you think will stop the movement of this social justice warrior thing where it's just argue, you know, distract, divide? Is it jobs? Is that the thing that can actually bring people together?
Well, I think the answer, quite simply, is we have to bring back a decent standard of living for every American who wants to work and certainly be employable in this great country. We have to do that.
It's just simple. Just as simple as that, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So for those folks, let's switch gears for a second and talk about how you can protect your wealth and how you can start yourself on a path to sustainability, because I, at this point, until the government rights itself, we're on our own to some degree. And, you know, is it wise to start getting into the stock market, or are we seeing the peak and then it's going to start to drop?
Well, I think the answer to that is, you know, I stated quite emphatically in the June issue of the Straight Money Analysis, the June 2016 issue, that I thought we had the potential to go to 20,000 in the Dow.
And we did.
And we did. Yeah. I thought there was the possibility we would go to that level prior to the election or shortly thereafter. And as you know, we weren't able to close above Dow 20,000 until late December of 2016, and then again we were able to close above it in early January 2017. So the upside objectives in the market were reached, and I had 20,000 in the Dow as an objective and 2350 in the S&P 500.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at this point, this market is setting up for a meaningful correction. I think it could be as deep as 15 or 20%. That would take the Dow down to probably 17,000, 17,500 in the Dow. And I think if we look for any further upside here, I think it's limited to a couple of hundred points. So I think at this juncture, it would make sense to reduce risk, reduce your exposure, raise some cash reserves, and get to the sidelines and prepare for lower prices and a much better reentry point into the market. I think this market could be setting up for some disappointment. It has a lot of built-in good news, and mm-hmm. I think this market at this point, honestly, Elaine, is looking for an excuse to go down. I think the three immediate concerns is the market's extremely overvalued, widely overextended, rampantly euphoric. And I think, quite frankly, this may be a time to take some money off the table and certainly prepare for lower prices.
So with switching that to, I don't know, bonds or silver or gold, what would you
Well,
switch
I think
it to?
The 35-year bull market in bonds is now over. The
okay.
question is not if we'll see higher interest rates, but how high and how quickly. I think we have to look towards the precious metals as being a hedge against inflation and certainly a storage of value. And I think at these levels it would make sense to buy some gold and silver, but very interestingly, I think we've got some economic trouble on the horizon. We now have something happening that I've researched has happened only twice in the last 50 years. It happened once in 1973 and again in 1980. And both times it led to a major economic recession, and those three things were a strong dollar, rising interest rates, and rising commodity prices. So as you know, we've recently had the dollar at a 14-year high. Commodity prices are up over 25% in the last year. And we've witnessed oil prices up over 40% in the last year. So I think we've got some economic storm clouds building on the horizon, and I think people are going to have to prepare for some tough times before things get better.
So will the jobs coming back, all the jobs that have been announced throughout various industries, will that lower or shall make the trough more shallow? Will it?
Well, I think it'll buffer certainly what's been building in the economy now for quite some time. I think the key is how quickly we can start to bring these jobs back to the shores of America.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we can accomplish what needs to be done by the first or latter half of 2017, but I think people have to put in perspective, as positive as the things President Trump is proposing, we're not going to see the benefits of these plans and certainly what he's working on putting forward as quickly as a lot of people want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see some tough times moving forward, although I think in the long term we're going to benefit from what is taking place. But we're not, by any stretch of the imagination, going to witness the instant relief a lot of people would want to believe.
Well, I know you said that reducing regulations, which I really like, you know, you for one new regulation, you got to get rid of two. I thought that was pretty cool. What about the tax situation? I mean, you got one side saying you can't cut taxes because the deficit will explode. But on the flip side, if you cut taxes and have business return, I don't know, is it me, but if you have more people working paying less, doesn't that outstrip screwing over a small amount of people?
Oh, I think when you talk about taxes, we have the highest corporate income tax in the world, right around 39%. Ironically, as I'm sure you know, Ireland has the lowest corporate tax base in the world, right around 12%.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to cut corporate taxes significantly, in which to give the incentive to bring corporate America back to the shores of this great country and hopefully reinvest in plants and equipment and the training needed for people to be put back to work and certainly make a meaningful contribution to turning this great country around. It can happen. I know it'll happen. It's just going to take time. It's going to take patience.
Well, from a small business perspective, what they've managed to do with the corporate tax is just is catch all the small businesses, because the larger transnational ones don't pay them. They've left. I mean, they were bragging about not paying taxes. What, GE, they paid none.
You're absolutely right. I think the key for small businesses is we've got to put in place tax incentives and we have to cut regulation. These little small businesses are regulated to death. They can't even operate.
Well, they make it sound like the huge corporations are the major drivers of employment. It's not. It's the small businesses.
Small businesses hire 90% of new workers, and I know you're aware of that
Oh,
fact.
Yeah. I am. I'm one of them. So if we can, it's funny, it's the big business gets all of the press as if they're driving the drivers. But I noticed that the president had the small business owners up in the White House, which I thought was different. I mean, in a good way, because they never get to be listened to. But if we're allowed to flourish, then I think that's going to be, as you said, much more effective at fixing the problem than letting GE and the rest of those guys come back. Yeah, they should. Yes, they should bring their jobs back with them. But we need to be the ones that are finally fed, because we need the relief. They've been making money all along. They've just found a different way to do it while cutting competition.
Well, you know, when you talk about business, do you know how many employees qualifies under the existing guidelines as a small business?
No.
100.
Really? Wow.
And so if you have a small business and you're employing 100 people, that's not a small business.
No.
That's a pretty decent-sized operation.
It is. When I got three, I'm a small business. 100, huh? Interesting. Well, let's take a small break, and then we come back. I want to get more of your take on how we can wiggle our way out of this trap. You're
okay.
Listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. So now we're talking about how do we know something's coming and it's not going to be good. And we're talking about how you can hedge and protect yourself against it. So, Joe, you mentioned precious metals. You mentioned saving cash. Is there a strategy that you would tell somebody, young or old, you know, save 10%? Is there something you can do to try to push it faster? Is there some strategy that you'd recommend?
Well, I think you certainly can't continue to spend money you don't have. I think that goes without saying.
Yeah.
I think people have to understand that we have to live within our means now more importantly than ever before. I think we're facing perilous times ahead, although I'll say it again, in the long term, I think the problems we're going to go through is going to allow us to have a better country and a better life. And I think the global economy on balance now is deleveraging, and we're seeing problems through all the various economies all over the world. We've got problems, as you know, in China, Japan, Italy, and certainly here in the U.S. we're starting to see the early signs of an economic slowdown.
Mm-hmm.
The latest retail sales numbers that came in for the Christmas and New Year holiday season were very poor. I think on balance, people were very, very cautious in spending just a minimal amount of money to certainly get through the holidays. And people are now preparing for this job market possibly not improving as quickly as we think it should. And I think you have to take a very defensive stance, not only with your investments in the stock and bond markets, but I think more importantly, you have to be very cautious now as to what's happening in your retirement account. We have total retirement assets in America of about $23 trillion, but IRA accounts make up over $7 trillion of those retirement assets. And I think the risk to pension plans and certainly individual 401ks and IRAs at this point could be very great.
Mm-hmm.
So this may be a time to go cash in those accounts and certainly take the risk off the table and allow the market and the economy to do what's needed as we move forward, and certainly protect your capital, certainly protect your retirement asset base, and prepare for some troubled waters and some tough times.
Isn't there something that you can do in terms of switching your IRA to a gold-based IRA? I think I've heard of something like that. Do those exist?
Well, you can certainly convert part of your IRA to a gold IRA. You can certainly do that. There's many, many different ways you can do it, many different firms that can accomplish what needs to be done in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the other side of the coin is you want to continue, if you're gainfully employed, to contribute the maximum to your 401k and your IRA.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important that you continue to have your focus on your retirement dollars and know exactly where they are and how they're working. And you want to continue to stay gainfully employed in any way that you can, because quite frankly, we've got about 100 million people that are out of the workforce, and a lot of them have given up looking for meaningful employment, but a lot of them are certainly trying to find, once again, decent paying jobs. So what I'm saying, I think the competition for any position is going to have many, many applicants applying for it, and it's going to come down to the best qualified, most skilled person that, frankly, is going to get the job.
Well, hopefully we'll have a growth of entrepreneurs, since the regulations hopefully will, you know, stop inhibiting people from starting up new ventures. I mean, so there's lots of ways. It doesn't have to be taking someone's job. You can start your own thing too, right?
Well, I think we have to make capital available once again in the marketplace, the small business. We've got to make capital available to the entrepreneurs who are going to be innovative and certainly drive the technology as we move forward to the next level. And I think we have to focus and do whatever we can to help these people.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to get away from looking at the short-term bottom line and, you know, whether or not we're profitable in the short term, and focus on profitability over the long term. And allowing our small businesses and our skilled workers and our entrepreneurs to share commensurately in the growth and certainly profit potential of the U.S. economy as it moves forward.
Well, I know this is kind of a non sequitur, but I'm just curious as to your take about this talk about secession of California. Do you think that's even a remote possibility?
Well, I think it's a very good possibility. Again, the question is, how quickly do we see the changes that are very, very sorely needed? I think we're at the point now where everyone is focused, and correctly focused, on the major problem that healthcare has become.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, getting rid of the government control of it, it's going to be, and let the entrepreneurial side of it kick in, the consumer-based healthcare. That's the driver that should be the pressure to bear on what's going on now. He actually, the president.
Well, I think, quite frankly, to touch upon even further what you've just said, we've got too many people uninsured, we've got too many people underinsured, and
mm-hmm.
we've got a problem now with health care costs that continue to go up and the inability of people to be able to meet them. That's the problem.
It's true, but it's artificial. I mean, so the costs are driven without any regard to the market pressure. They don't have
yes,
one.
Yes, they are.
And that needs to be put in place. And one of the things, I love the fact that his executive order basically stopped the mandate. The next thing that they should do is have, I don't know if you can do an executive order or whatever, but you need to start listing the prices of healthcare services online. The hospitals need to do it. The pharmacies need to do it. That would be so people know they can start going to a place that's cheaper. How would they know? It just gets made up as they go along. That's a major problem.
Well, you know, we've always prided ourselves on having the best healthcare in the world. The only major problem is very few can afford it.
Well, it wasn't always that way, though.
No, it wasn't.
And the fact that it's become centralized and corporatized, I think, is double down on the most expensive aspects of healthcare. While they make you buy it, that you don't even want it and you have to buy it. So this contraction, I mean, I can talk about healthcare because I'm living it. Dozens of insurance companies to five major companies. Dozens of pharmacies to, but two chains now, maybe three. Everything has just been monopolized. And it's the hospitals. There's maybe one or two hospital systems in cities now instead of community hospitals, rural hospitals. So bigger is not better. It just makes you have to pay a price that you don't know who's, I mean, the whole behemoth is generating, like the prison system. You need people in it in order to make your product. Well, you need to make, you need to have patients in it, but you need to keep them in such a way that you get as much money as you can from them and treat and street. And everybody's not getting better care. No one can afford it, but it seems to be getting bigger. So how do you break that? I think it's competition, but is there anything from an economic standpoint that you think would hasten the fall of that type of system?
Well, you know, a physician can treat, and you can speak to this more specifically, a variety of conditions and treat them very effectively.
Correct.
The biggest problem moving forward is the cost of the medication to treat the condition.
True. But President Trump said something very interesting. We've been subsidizing, and he's very astute, because I've talked about this before, and most doctors know this. We've been subsidizing the socialized countries' medication. Their whole system is based on cost control. So they pass that cost that they have to, you know, the cut that they take in those countries is passed along to us, and that needs to stop. That's a huge driver of the cost of health, of pharmaceuticals.
Well, I believe we're going to have to restructure the way healthcare does business from the top right on down to the bottom, Elena.
I agree. The 1 second or 1 minute we have left, how can people reach you?
People can go to the straightmoneyanalysis.com website, click on newsletter. There's a full sample issue of the newsletter on the website that you can download and read. As we speak, I'm working on the next issue of the newsletter, which will be the March 2017 issue. And anyone becomes a subscriber, we'll give you the full one-year subscription at the six-month subscription price, $149.95. We'll save you $110 on the one-year subscription. And I'm probably the only newsletter writer in the country that'll take a call from a subscriber and clarify additionally what I write about in the newsletter or answer your question. And people can always call and reach me directly at phone, area code 386, number 677-8642.
Thank you so much, Joe. And I have to say to my listeners, I read last month's Straight Money Analysis newsletter. It was awesome. And I feel like I've got a really good foundation on how I proceed. So I recommend you guys do that. Thank you very much, Joe, for being a guest. I hope you'll come back. And thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.